Seal it for thy courts above.
How thankful we ought to be for men of depth and ability for the songs that have been led tonight. Jim, we appreciate your abilities and your dedication. We're thankful for those prayers that have been led. Bill and Jim, we're thankful for you men. And I'm personally thankful for every one of you, for your part that you have in encouraging each other. When the Lord taught us to sing and make melody in our hearts and to teach one another and admonish one another in psalms and hymns and spiritual songs, you do that, you fulfill that desire of the Lord's in a very beautiful way. And I thank God for you for your part in this continuing upbuilding that we're undergoing here as a body of people. Tonight, I plan to continue at this hour. I had to change what I was going to speak on. Now, I'm speaking on the same subject from a different point of view, however, and I'll explain why. About 3 o'clock or 2:30, I went to the office to finish preparation for tonight, and I saw a picture. It was lying there on a stand outside my office door, and it's so moved me that I could not find that what I had to say to you really was all that important. I didn't think that you probably would have to hear what I had already prepared. It really was not relevant to our needs. It would be at some other time, and if I hadn't seen that picture, I think it would have been all right anyway. But I want to speak to us on the subject of give us this day our daily bread, but it will be quite a different message than what I had prepared to speak on. But I think you need this one. I know I need it. So let's begin by just simply the statement, give us this day our daily bread. This is a statement that we are aware of, but in our situation it seems perhaps redundant and superfluous to pray such a prayer, and I don't mean that irreverently. We've become seemingly so self-sufficient and so independent of God that we perhaps don't really and truly feel that we need to pray, give us this day our daily bread. When Jesus taught them to pray this prayer, they were working for pennies a day. In the countries of the Arabs today, the Huffords tell us that the daily bread there is literal. You go and buy it or bake it every day. Just a big flat loaf of bread that's used as perhaps the center of their food, as of their diet. But we're going to notice tonight, give us today our daily bread. This is the first petition that he's allowed us to speak that is a personal petition for personal needs. The other petitions had to do with God's name being honored, his kingdom coming, and the fact that he is our Father. We noticed all of these petitions as they were suggested to us by the Lord as he gave us instruction on how to pray. This particular one, give us today our daily bread, is the first personal petition that he suggests or requires us or instructs us to offer to God as a prayer. I don't think we ought to be ashamed to admit that he gives us the leeway and the privilege of praying for physical things. I read in a book just this past week, and the man seemed to be embarrassed that God would so condescend to allow us to pray for things that were physical. And he spent the main part of the article, after a very brief introduction on physical things, he spent the rest of the article talking about how really this was a petition for spiritual things. I don't believe that's true. I see in it a reflection again of the recurring condescension of the Lord to get down to where we are and touch us. He knows what we're made out of. He knows we're frame out of bone and we consist of dust. The psalmist says he knows our frame and he knows that we're dust. And he knows that though we don't live by bread alone, he knows also that we can't live without bread. And he himself knows this by personal experience. He fasted for 40 days, and it says he was hungry afterwards. He was wearied because of his journey many times. He was thirsty. He was tired. He ate just like you and I. And he smelled things cooking, and it made his appetite respond. His enemies called him a glutton. And though I'm sure he was not a glutton, I'm sure that they saw his social calendar and how he was often found around the table with friends and enemies alike. And they saw his busy social schedule, and they called him a glutton and a wine bibber. But nevertheless, Jesus was not ashamed to be known as one who not only ate, but also allowed other people to eat and was concerned about their physical well-being and their needs being met. So I make no apology for speaking on the subject that we're speaking on tonight. The first of these petitions, or at least this petition before any of those that follow, he asked us to pray here before he tells us to pray for forgiveness. He says, pray for your daily food before you pray for forgiveness. Now, he didn't say it like that. He just simply enlisting them in priority in their arrangement. He places this one first. Give us this day our daily bread. Forgive us our trespasses as we forgive those who trespass against us. And I'm sure that the Lord, having made us, knows that a person can't get very serious about spiritual things as long as hunger pangs are eating away at him and those depending on him. And I think a mother could not be too interested in spiritual matters as long as her children were starving. And I'm sure that that's one of the reasons why he placed this petition first. He placed this petition before he placed the petition, lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. And I don't doubt but what he knew that many temptations disappear once our needs are met, once our physical needs are met. Some temptations just simply either disappear or they're diminished significantly. A person who is very hungry, if his need is met, the temptation to steal food would be diminished greatly. And a person whose marital home or his marital relationship at the home, if it's satisfactory and if it's fulfilling, his temptation to commit adultery or her temptation to commit adultery is greatly lessened. And for this reason, he says, you ought to each have your wife and you ought to each give the other their due. So you find this petition, give us our daily bread, and this includes all of our physical needs. It's not just bread, but it's bread and it's drink, and it's clothing, and it's shelter, and it's car payment and house rent, and all these things you see that are involved in our daily physical needs. This petition includes all of these things. And God has given us all of them for our good. When you look around about us in America, you get the impression that we never have any need of anything. We're a nation that's filled to overflowing. And sometimes I get right afraid and ashamed that we've been so blessed. And to him to whom much is committed, or he to whom much is committed, from him shall be required the more. And the one to whom much is given, they will ask the more. And I'm confident that you and I, as citizens of this great land, a land of plenty, are going to have to answer in a way that many, many other nations will not have to answer. I want tonight just briefly to bring to your attention some of the bounties that God has given us. The Father of mercies has strewn our path with all the good things of life that we could possibly ever desire. The universe bears witness and reflects this interest that God has in our physical well-being. And if you could list a number of all the good things to eat, all the delicious things to eat, where in the world would you ever stop? I wish there were some list. In fact, I've thought about looking, and I don't know where to start. But I'd like to know if there's not some kind of a list that lists all the good things on earth that are available to eat. I'll bet you it would run into the hundreds of thousands. Beginning from just plain simple water. Did you ever get so thirsty out somewhere that you just didn't think you could go any further? Well, I was deer hunting once and got lost and Couldn't get back over this mountain. I had to go way around the mountain, and I thought I was going to die of thirst. And I came across a little trickling, cold stream of water, and I just buried my face in it like a sheep would up to its eyes and just drank until I nearly popped. And I thought, my, how good plain old simple water is, and how thankful I was that the Lord had made it. That's a universal blessing. We couldn't live without it, you see. Milk that comes from the breast of a mother for a little tiny suckling child. What a beautiful universal food that is. And from just the tiniest little babies of the animals up through the young babies that we have as human beings, just this one simple blessing of milk is a blessing that how could you ever estimate its value? The food that God gives the animals. I had a friend in Winchester, Tennessee, when I was about 5 years old, and you'll pardon these personal references, but you could give me that many more of your own. This friend of mine was a milk cow. She lived down the street from the house, and I used to go down there to see her about every day or every other day or so, and I'd take with me a present. Every time I went to see her, I'd take a big sack of fresh, green corn shucks. And if you've never watched a cow eat corn shucks, you haven't watched anything really worth watching as far as eating is concerned. And I'd sit there and I'd pour that sack of corn shucks, and here she'd come, and I'd just squat down and watch her. And that old cow would just chew those things until my saliva glands would just nearly jump out of my body, and I just want to say, almost give me one. That looks so good. Sure, and you've seen it too if you've watched the cow eat corn shucks. It's just not anything better than that. But my mother had prepared, and the reason why the cow got the corn shucks, my mother had prepared, and I can see it to this day in our dining room, a great big bowl of fried corn. And she can fix it like nobody on earth can fix it, with bacon drippings. Why, I tell you, there's not anything better on earth than corn like that, fried. And the cow got the shucks, see, and we got the corn, and everything that God made, you see, somebody enjoyed it, and it's just beautiful. You little kids, peanut butter and jelly sandwiches, you know, boy, there can't be anything better than that. It ruins a steak for me. If I smell peanut butter and jelly and there's a steak on the table, I want the peanut butter and jelly. That's about how good it is. And you can just name it by the thousands upon thousands upon thousands, the things that God has given us in the way of good food. I remember one day in Memphis, Tennessee in 1964, coming home from work from Union Avenue. I had worked late and it was cold, and it's right in the very middle of winter, about December. And I worked till about 6 o'clock and came home, and it was about supper time, and I never will forget driving up into the driveway and opening the door of the car and smelling the smoke out of the fireplace, out of the chimney. My wife had a good warm fire going. I opened the door with that hickory smoke smelling, and I opened the door, and she was in there frying sausage, country sausage, for supper. And there was the big warm fire reflecting against the wall, and there were my children in there in their pajamas, and there my wife was, a beautiful wife standing in the kitchen fixing supper for us. Well, I'll tell you, it overwhelmed me so much with the beauties of the physical blessings that God has given me, I never will get over it. What a beautiful day that was. And I just stood there and took in the aroma of the hickory wood and that country sausage, and I thought, my, my, Lord, I have my cup running over. How good it was to be there and have those physical blessings. God's done that for us, and he's given us such an abundance of it that we ought to be thankful. Well, you could add to the physical blessings such as our food and our drink and all of these things. Think about the taste buds that have to be in your own mouth and all, and the sense of smell in order to enjoy those things. You know, if you didn't even know who had made all the food, when you come to realize that there are taste buds that respond to everything that's on the face of the earth, all these good things, they wouldn't be good if something hadn't been placed in us that recognized it and responded to it. And if you didn't even know who made the food, you'd have to come to the conclusion that the same one that made the food made the taste buds and the smell factor in your body. All this was made by the same person. Well, that's a double miracle. What if there was filet mignon and mushrooms and asparagus? And I know all you, some of you little kids don't think that's so hot, but you will later. But all these good things, and you just multiply all that. What if all of that would just went by the board, you know, and we see all of that and just and pizza, you know, and just say, yick. And then all we want to do is just sit and eat mud. You'd think, you know, there's something wrong. But that's not the way it is. The same God that made all this good food made our taste buds and made all these things that respond to it. And it's beautiful, and we need to be aware of it. You can add to that the wool and the flax and the cotton that this God made for covering our bodies. You can add to that the color of the dyes, the designs, the appreciation that your mind has for symmetry and beauty. He's that kind of a God too, you see. Did you ever look at a butterfly? Go over here in the library up near the typing carrels as you go up that stairway there. Look at that display of butterflies if you want to see a display of beauty and design and absolute perfection of design and color. It'll amaze you. I go by there every day I go to the library and I stop in front of that and I say hello and I'm glad to see you and I appreciate you. Because it just dumbfounds me at the beauty of God and how much He has done that's so much like what we respond to. He has the same tastes. You can add to that the fact that He's given us trees to build our houses, and where there are no trees, there is rock in abundance. In America, we have trees. In the Near East or the Middle East, they have rocks. In Greece and all, they have stones there out of which they build their houses. And you can just add one thing on top of the other. Today, after existing in the earth for some, thousands and thousands of years, there is today in the earth a quantity of what we call crude oil that has been there for these thousands of years, worthless until just the last century, but now it's there waiting to be tapped and waiting to be bought from the Arabs, but nevertheless, it's there. And you see, all these things have been lying there waiting for us to enjoy these physical things. Now, God knows all of this. He put it, where do you think, and why would an earth have that great a supply of oil and the things necessary to carry on a machine age unless the God that made us knew what we would do in time and eventually we'd come to this thing of having a mechanical machine age that would have to be supplied by oil. The medicines that we have, and you could go on and on of the things that God has given us that we might enjoy. The Bible confirms this and just simply says that He cares about you. God cares about you. And I never cease to be amazed at this great supply and abundance that He's given us of things that are physical. And I thank God for Him, and I know you do too. We sing the song, Father, we thank Thee for the night and for the pleasant morning light, for rest and food and loving care, for all that makes the day so fair. Now I want to ask you a question. What is your responsibility in this? And how are we responsible for this great bounty that we receive? What is your responsibility? Three very simple things I think we're forced to conclude. Number one, that we ought to cease being anxious. When Jesus says here that we ought to pray, Father, give us today our daily bread. When we see about us the great superabundance of what God has prepared, and then we hear Jesus saying, ask God to give you your daily food, I think we ought to take Him at His word. I think we ought to quit being anxious. I don't mean just for food. I'm talking about being anxious for anything that's physical, for anything that's necessary for our physical survival. It's a slap in the face to Jesus and His Father to say, I believe in you, and yet I'm anxious and worried about what I'm going to eat and what I'm going to wear and where I'm going to stay. Jesus said, I tell you, don't be anxious about your life, what you shall eat or what you shall drink, nor about your body, what you shall put on. Isn't life more than food and the body more than raiment or clothing? Look at the birds of the air. They neither sow nor reap nor gather into barns, and yet your heavenly Father feeds them. Are you not of more value than they? And which of you, by being anxious, can add one cubit to his span of life? And why are you anxious about clothing? Consider the lilies of the field, how they grow. They neither toil nor spin. Yet I tell you, even Solomon, in all his glory, was not arrayed like one of these. But if God so clothes the grass of the field, which today is alive and tomorrow is thrown into the oven, will he not much more clothe you, O men of little faith? Therefore, do not be anxious, saying, what shall we eat, or what shall we drink, or what shall we wear? For the Gentiles seek all these things. In other words, people who aren't Christians, people in the world seek these things. And your heavenly Father knows that you need them all. But seek first his kingdom and his righteousness, and all these things will be yours as well. Therefore, don't be anxious about tomorrow, for tomorrow will be anxious for itself. Let the day's own trouble be sufficient for the day. That's why he said, just pray, give us this day our daily bread. Not give us this week our weekly supply, but just day by day. And I think, frankly, we need to stop being anxious. And if you're worrying, I think it's sin. And if I'm worrying, it's a sin. He's told us too many times not to worry. How can you disobey the command of the Lord you serve without incurring his wrath and without being guilty of sin? He's told us over and over and over, don't worry, don't be anxious. Then for you to worry and for me to be anxious, it's just simply outright sin. And we must stop it. It reflects our lack of faith in the one we hold as our Lord. That's one thing I think that if we'll recognize that God is the giver of all these good gifts, and he has told us, just ask, and I'll give it to you. He knows you have need of these things before you ask him, but he said, just ask, give us today our daily bread. Then secondly, I think it's going to cause us to be genuinely thankful. Paul told Timothy that having food and clothing, we ought to therewith be with content, and not to desire to be rich, for it causes many who desire to be rich, they said, they're pierced through with many sorrows. He said, you ought not to desire to be rich, but having food and clothing, to be content with it. And then again, in 1 Corinthians, the 10th chapter, in verse 10, we're told to not grumble. We ought to be thankful. We ought to be content with the necessities. And we ought not to grumble. And in 1 Corinthians 10, the statement that's made there is simply this, that these things were written for our learning. Now, this was a reference to the Hebrew people back in the time when they came up out of Egypt. And it says, these things are warnings for us not to desire evil as they did. And then on down in verse 9 of chapter 10, it says, we must not put the Lord to the test as some of them did and were destroyed by serpents, nor grumble as some of them did and were destroyed by the destroyer. And back in the book of Numbers, chapter 11, this is the incident that it refers to. And the people complained in the hearing of the Lord about their misfortunes. And when the Lord heard it, his anger was kindled, and the fire of the Lord burned among them and consumed some outlying parts of the camp. Then the people cried to Moses, and Moses prayed to the Lord, and the fire abated. So the name of that place was called Taberah, because the fire of the Lord burned among them. Now the rabble that was among them, that is, the mixed multitude, they had a strong craving, and the people of Israel also wept again, saying, oh, that we had had meat to eat. We remember the fish we had in Egypt for nothing, the cucumbers, the melons, the leeks, the onions, and the garlic. But now our strength is dried up, and there's nothing at all but this manna to look at. And you can just hear them almost say, spit it through their teeth, this manna to look at. In fact, they were sick of looking at it, and the Lord became very, very discouraged. Now, the manna was like coriander seed in its appearance like that of bdellium. The people went out and gathered it and ground it in mills and beat it into mortars, and boiled it in pots and made cakes of it. And the taste of it was like the taste of cakes baked with oil. When the dew fell upon the camp in the night, the manna fell with it. Moses heard the people weeping throughout their families, every man at the door of his tent, and the anger of the Lord blazed hotly, and Moses was displeased. Now I want to talk to you young children just a minute. I think it's high time that you learn to be very thankful for the food that's set before you. There are those of you who go to the table with your lip in the air and with your nose in the air. You go there not thankful at all. And when you give thanks, you're a hypocrite because of the fact that you've just gotten through complaining about what's been set before you. And then when your father asks you to give thanks, you bow your head and you give thanks for something you're not even thankful for. You've just been grumbling about it. and you ought to be ashamed. My children have done it. I suppose every child in here has done it. Let me tell you what, there are millions and millions of people tonight that are dying from starvation, literally, and you need to be thankful for what you have. Maybe it's not a hamburger with ketchup all over it. So what? Maybe it's something that you don't really prefer. But if it will nourish your body and it will give you strength, then for goodness sakes, eat it and be thankful to God for it. And don't you grumble. The grumbling of the children of Israel brought the wrath of God upon those people. They were wanting something else. They wanted something else other than the meager necessities that they had been blessed with. And when they complained about these necessities, God caused this plague to come upon among them. He hasn't caused a plague like that among you and me, but how do you know but what he's going to work out something that will teach you a lesson to be very thankful for what you have? Now let me talk to those of you who eat in Patty Cobb and in the Heritage. You've sat there and you've grumbled and you've complained, and I point at you because I myself did it when I was in school, and I thought, here we have nothing but this grub to look at. And how we remember back in our mother's house when we had all these wonderful things to eat, and the cookies and the cakes and the pies and all these things we had. Don't you remember back then we had all that for nothing, and here all we have is this slop to look at. But I'll tell you one thing, you better quit grumbling. God killed these people because they grumbled. I suggest that you sit down at the table and thank God from the bottom of your hearts that you've got something to eat. Because there are lots and lots of people tonight who will die simply from malnutrition and from starvation, and they don't have anything to eat. May I urge you to be very thankful for what you have. I want you to flip on this. Let me show you this as an illustration. This is what caused me to... I was jerked up short tonight, and this is what made me realize that what I had to say to you earlier really was not really what you needed. These are people, young and old. The young person on the left has nothing to look forward to except the pain of hunger. These people are in Ethiopia. The person on the right is an old person, too weak to walk. He or she is just sitting there waiting to die. Don't have anything to eat. I found this picture. It was out on a table as I was going to the office today at 2:30 to study. And I thought of what I had prepared to say, and I saw this picture, and I thought, I can't say what I was going to say. It's completely irrelevant. But I thought it might be very well that we just simply stop and think about how much we have and thank God for just simply having something to eat. Something, anything to eat, whether it be warmed over toast or warmed over whatever. Be thankful to God you've got something to warm over. The rich man went to hell because he refused to give Lazarus a crumb. And he lifted up his voice in Hades, in torment, saying to Abraham, in whose bosom Lazarus lay, and said, Abraham, my father, send Lazarus that he may dip his finger in water and cool my tongue. I'm in anguish in these flames. Abraham said, I can't do it. Remember that you in your lifetime received your good things, and Lazarus in his lifetime evil things. And the man went to hell because of the fact that he refused to be touched by the needs of his fellow man. When John wrote his first letter, he said, if any man has this world's goods, and that's you and me, we've got them. Baby, we've got them. Yes, sir. If any man has this world's goods and sees his brother in need and closes up his heart from him, how does the love of God abide in him? When James says about this thing of telling people be warmed and filled and yet you don't give them the things necessary for the body, that your faith is dead. In Matthew, the 25th chapter, the scene of the judgment was not determined by many things that we would consider very important. There were no doctrinal issues mentioned there, though doctrine is important. But the thing that Jesus said, the judgment scene revolved around whether or not you and I have been aware enough of other people's needs to share with them and see that they were given something to eat when they were hungry. Jesus said, they're going to be standing before me on the right and the left. And to those on the right hand, I'll say certain things, and it'll be dependent upon what they've done toward the hungry. He says, I was hungry and you gave me food. I was thirsty and you gave me drink. I was a stranger and you welcomed me. I was naked and you clothed me. Sick and you visited me. I was in prison and you came to me. To those on the left hand, he said, I was a stranger, or I was hungry and you gave me no food. I was thirsty and you gave me no drink. I was a stranger and you did not welcome me. Naked and you did not clothe me. Sick and in prison and you did not visit me. He said, these are going to go away into eternal punishment. What is your responsibility and mine? You know, I've often wanted to send money to people overseas who were in conditions like this, but to whom do you send it? How do you know it's going to be used properly? How do you know it won't be used to just keep a great big machinery of human operation, you know, financed? How do you know it won't be wasted like that? How do you know it won't be ripped off? Let me tell you this. The reason why I'm showing this tonight is because the church in Ethiopia is conducting a very extensive feeding program to try to save people's lives so they can get the gospel to them. And if you want to send something each month, if you want to take something in your family, set it aside and send it to feed somebody, here's an opportunity for doing something that you know will be used properly. This will be sent through the church. And they're doing a tremendous work, but they need help. And I read what was said there today, and I'm determined we need to do something about it. Send, if you want to send something, send it to the El Segundo Church in care of the elders, 4368 North Sutter, Stockton, California, 95204. And mark that check or your contribution for the Ethiopian Famine Relief Fund. Now, there's something that we can do. I believe that the only way we can really be thankful for what we've received, and the only way we can really pray this prayer, give us this day our daily bread, and make it something other than give me this day my daily bread. It's us, he says, give us this day our daily bread. The only way we can really pray that prayer, and the only way you can really and truly be thankful for what you've received, is by sharing it with somebody else that doesn't have any. So this prayer, give us this day our daily bread. If we're wanting to participate in the prayer, if we're wanting to be touched by it and motivated to live it, I'm confident that we'll have to not only receive it, but we'll have to receive it with thanksgiving. We'll have to not be anxious over it, and we'll have to share it with other people who don't have any. The first petition that we offered was Our Father who art in heaven, and we noticed the one whom we pray to is our Father. The petition, Hallowed be thy name, was this, that our entire life might be devoted as an anthem of praise to God. That's hallowing the name of God. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done. In order for us to pray this prayer and participate in it, we're going to have to surrender ourselves to God's rule in our lives as it began in the coming of Jesus Christ and continues to this present day. How do we participate in this petition? By not being anxious, by being thankful, and by sharing it with other people. Brethren, I believe that the prayer of Jesus Christ that he taught his disciples was meant to be prayed and lived. Will you help me? More than likely, knowing myself, if I send something here, after about a month, I will have forgotten that these people exist, and I'll have to be reminded again. And you're not all that much different. We're all that way. But as you would that men should do to you, you do even so to them. This is the law and the prophets. And this need is standing, pleading for us. Please help me. May God bless us. Consider these things seriously. And as you pray this prayer, give us this day our daily bread. Will you remember those people who have nothing while we have such abundance that it can't be described, really? Jeff, would you come and lead us in a word of prayer and ask God to bless us with this intent in mind that we be aware of other people's needs, and then we'll stand and sing the invitation song.